Hello and welcome to The Rundown, a podcast from Politics Home. I'm your host, Alan Tollhurst, and this week we're returning to the cost of living crisis, specifically the continued pressure on household bills and what can be done to bring them down as families continue to feel the squeeze. We'll meet to discuss what role energy efficiency could play in tackling fuel poverty and what measures people are looking for from government to help bring down their bills. I'm delighted to be joined by Bent Jensen, Group Executive, Vice President and Energy Solutions Provider, Grundfos, as well as Scarlett Maguire, Director of the Pollsters, JL Partners, and my colleague here at Poll Home, political reporter, Nadine Batchelor-Hunt. So I guess start by just kind of asking, what do you kind of mean when we talk about energy efficiency measures in both kind of domestic and kind of commercial settings? Ben, could you just outline what those kind of measures are and how they might have an impact on kind of on bills in the future?
Sure. Thanks a lot for the question. So energy efficiency is kind of what we normally could call the first view. So what you can do in order to reduce your energy consumption is actually the best way of solving the energy crisis and finding ways to solve the constant pressure we have on energy consumption in buildings and across the main board.
And so what kind of specifically, so things like, I guess, changing people's boilers or servicing them or bringing in kind of more efficient appliances, what are the kind of things that individuals can do in that sense to kind of bring down those bills?
Yeah, so if you look at the buildings in general, then of course you could look at the building envelope, which is typically insulation, windows, the bigger stuff, which are very expensive and very, very time-consuming efforts to do. Then you can also look at some things that are more tangible, smaller things that you can implement and trigger relatively short time with relatively small means that can give savings that are also both tangible and meaningful for the house owners.
Mm. Yeah, Nadine, obviously there's been kind of a lot of discussion over what the parties can do on this. Obviously for Labour, I guess we'll come on to the 28 billion, as you have to discuss the 28 billion whenever you talk about Labour and this kind of stuff. But they obviously put a lot of money, or we're talking about putting a lot of money in towards insulation as being this big programme to help bring down bills, and also the way that actually it could help grow the economy in terms of bringing in jobs as well, right?
Yeah, it's a big cornerstone of Labour's kind of economic growth policy, really, is this Green Prosperity Plan. And I imagine that was why there was so much to-ing and fro-ing about it in terms of briefing and counter-briefing, because, you know, without that plan, what their economic strategy actually will be and where this, you know, much sought-after economic growth that, whether you like Liz Truss or not, she kind of got that topic on the agenda, will come from there. And a lot of it has been influenced by the success of the Inflation Reduction Act in America, which has seen mass investment in green energies and green companies, and has created a lot of jobs and has been relatively successful. So no, it has become a cornerstone. And I think the rolling back, so the 28 billion figure was already sort of rolled back on down to working towards 28 billion if fiscal rules allow by the second half of the next parliament. And then following lots of briefing and counter briefings or whatever, we're now down to, you know, I think it's about 6 billion. I think it's about that. And most of that money is coming from home insulation.
Yeah.
So it has really taken a big hit. And I don't even know how many, you know, stakeholders have come to me and said, energy bills are really high, in part because insulation in the UK is so poor. We're one of the most poorly insulated countries in Europe. So it's a big blow. And I think from talking to stakeholders, there is disappointment as well in that industry about, you know, there was a lot of hope for that sector, and now a lot of it is quite uncertain.
Yeah, Scarlett, kind of on that, there's obviously been a kind of vacillation between governments wanting to be massively in favour of doing this kind of stuff, putting big programmes forward. Boris Johnson had a big programme he talked about a couple of years ago, saying that Britain was lagging behind on lagging, one of his favourite phrases. And then it sort of didn't kind of come to anything. Obviously, you go back always as far as David Cameron and his sort of get rid of the green crap stuff, having spent a lot of money on energy efficiency. And I suppose it's kind of for different parties, I suppose, what does the kind of the polling show on how much their voters and how much kind of floating voters want to see these kind of measures come through?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the key thing for any sort of policymaker to consider is that I think it has to be, so energy efficiency has to be pitched as exactly that. So something that's going to save people money ultimately on their bills. So, and that's the way they can justify government's expenditure. And in that way, it's actually very popular. So, you know, we polled 10 bellwether constituencies. So these are constituencies that are incredibly important to both parties in the next election, will help decide the outcome of the election that we're expecting towards the end of this year. And a clear majority of voters there said that their vote would be influenced, or they'd be more inclined to vote for a party that would help them more with energy efficiency in their own homes.
Mm. Right. And so what kind of measures is that? Is it just things like insulation, or is it obviously there's the government's push to move people away from gas boilers onto heat pumps has hit some kind of, I guess you would say, communications issues around that kind of stuff? What is the kind of people, what are they looking for in this polling?
I think this is interesting. So this is where awareness is a really important issue. So we found that most people were prepared to spend a sort of average of £500 a year of themselves on increasing the energy efficiency of their homes. However, most people also said they'd most were more likely to consider insulation, which we know is actually a lot more expensive than that. Only about one in three voters were aware of more energy efficient ways, more cost efficient ways to increase the energy efficiency of their home, like heat pumps, for example. So a lot of this is actually going to be about awareness to help people find those cheaper ways of increasing the energy efficiency of their homes. And then I think you'll see more interest in doing so.
Yeah, Nadine, I think the Politico reported last week that the government was looking for someone to help sell the government's green vision to try and get this kind of, that essentially people don't really necessarily trust politicians on this stuff, but trying to get people, I think the kind of the dream person would be someone like David Attenborough, someone like really respected figures, that actually it's about kind of selling this message that spending this money, this outlay is worth it in the long run. It's not going to add more money to your bills, because there's been lots of pressure, even from other conservative politicians, suggesting that it's just going to add to bills rather than take money away from them.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a challenge for the government moving forward, because, you know, there are some in the Tory party that want a referendum on net zero. And this is something that has already been largely agreed on, you know, various COPs, that it's not something we have a choice on. Either we make these changes and transition to a green economy, which is the future, or the planet is sort of doomed. But there are people that are sceptical within the party. And I think any kind of green policy messaging is going to be a challenge for the government, because we've seen, you know, them pushing back the phasing out of combustible vehicles to 2035, because we've seen them use language like we want to max out the oil in the North Sea. You know, whether or not, for example, on the gas and oil licenses in the North Sea, whether or not that would actually have any tangible impact in terms of how much oil and gas is actually there. It's more about the rhetoric and what message it sends to the public and what message it sends to stakeholders. And as I touched on earlier, you know, stakeholders are very frustrated with the messaging from the government on this, because they want to see a government that is committed to green energy. They want to see a government that, you know, they can turn around to investors and say, listen, this is a priority for this government. They're consistent on it. And you can trust that your money is going to be invested well. And it just isn't there at the moment. So I think the government needs to get its house in order in terms of messaging on green energy and green power before it can kind of successfully, I think, present it to the public in something that they can have a lot of confidence in.
Yeah, Ben, as one of those kind of stakeholders, you work for a company that does commercial building services, you know, there's lots of kind of talk about, because this kind of crosses departments really, rather than moving away from kind of energy net zero, this is more in the kind of the housing department, regulations coming in. There's lots of talk about updating the regulations so that energy, that buildings, commercial buildings as well as homes, had to be more energy efficient, had to have these measures in place before they were built. What's kind of happening on that, and do you want to see more clarity, I suppose, around the regulations on that stuff?
Yeah, so of course there is a certain level of grants that are given through the home upgrade grants and these kind of initiatives where they are already kind of set some opportunities for people to dig into opportunities to upgrade their homes with investments into heat pumps or other larger, more expensive solutions. But obviously the regulation that is there needs to be kind of balanced against the support from the government also to change and to move things forward. In other countries, we've seen that regulations on building actually does support the general change towards the more green solutions installed in commercial buildings as well. And that needs to go hand in hand with incentive schemes and that the incentive schemes are actually targeted towards those particular areas where the upgrade of regulation is happening as well.
Mm. Yeah, and Scarlett, as Nadine mentioned there about this kind of idea of the Conservative Party wanting a referendum on net zero, pushing back on net zero stuff. But I suppose it's separating that stuff out. It's just that actually that stuff that you can do in your own home, A, will help with net zero stuff, but it's kind of a separate policy, isn't it? It's not simply about changing the way we move to nuclear or renewables, all that kind of stuff. It's actually about what you can do to fix, you know, we're looking to the third year of a cost of living crisis. These are the kind of measures that people want to see at kind of the micro level within their own homes, right?
Exactly. I think that's it. So broadly speaking, the public are supportive of net zero measures, but we know their support dramatically falls when people think it's going to cost them money or for fines they feel are punitive. And I guess this is sort of the opposite of that, isn't it? This is trying to convince people, or that they're already convinced actually, that this will save them money, and then they're much more likely to be on board.
Yeah, there was a report from the Environmental Audit Committee said that, you know, last year basically that it was kind of a false economy to hold back this kind of the money for energy efficiency measures effectively. And we're well behind, I think, in terms of the comparable countries with the amount of homes that have got the kind of required level of insulation and those kind of energy efficient measures. We've got quite a sort of a drafty set of housing stock essentially. And so people want to see these improved, right?
Yeah. So of course, houses and in general are installed with technology that is decades old and it's going to last for a number of decades. So if you don't change the uptake of energy in the buildings to heat them, then you're going to live with a long-term energy usage that is way too high. And when we know that from very small, low-cost investments, you can actually do some investments that are giving you a year-on-year return that is significantly better than just, you could say, supporting with grants for supporting the energy bill. And there aren't a significant amount of solutions that you can apply to both small private houses, like, for instance, installing a new circulator. We know typically going to give you 100 to 110 pounds of savings annually by an investment of between 150 and 250 pounds. Whereas we know that is, to Scarlett's point before, also what we've seen from our survey, that is the amount of money that people are willing to pay for upgrading their homes.
Yeah, so you can see that return there essentially, whereas some other measures, I guess, it will take a lot longer to see that return. So people are kind of less willing to invest that money, aren't they, if they're doing so. Nadine, as we talked about, the way that the government, kind of after the Oxbridge by-election, which was seen as a bit of a referendum on the ULEZ and net zero policies, the government kind of did a bit of a screeching U-turn on some of those policies. And in the King's speech, we didn't see a lot of measures around this kind of issue. Do you think that there's a feeling within the Tory party that was still the right thing to have done? Or do some MMPs think that actually that was a bit of an overreaction to a by-election with very specific outcomes?
I think it's mixed. And, you know, the departure of people like Chris Skidmore, I think, is significant in terms of he was very, I think he kind of led the review into net zero.
Having been the minister who signed it into law back in 2019 as well.
Yeah, and so for him to kind of, you know, resign and have a by-election called ahead of an election later this year kind of shows the strength and feeling among some Tory MPs. And then, of course, you've got people like Zach Goldsmith, who are kind of lords now, but are kind of still show some of the sentiment in the Conservative Party in terms of what they'd like to be seeing on net zero. But I think, you know, from a purely political point of view, I think it was quite an extreme reaction. I think it's generally seen that the kind of the way in which the fallout of the Uxbridge by-election was managed was quite strange. And it kind of felt like one of those times when Westminster gets caught up with something. You know, I think the Tories won Uxbridge by about 400 votes or something around that. So it was very small margins. But I think that was because the electoral prospects are quite, you know, poor for the Conservative Party at the moment. I don't think that's a controversial thing to say. I think a lot of people thought, oh, is there any way we can kind of replicate this elsewhere? But I do think, you know, it upset business because businesses were saying, hang on a minute, what on earth is going on here? And also it led to some rhetoric that was slightly kind of misleading. For example, the rhetoric about maxing out the North Sea oil and gas and claims that would make our domestic energy cheaper, when actually any oil and gas found there would be sold on the international market, which is where prices are set. It wouldn't actually have a direct impact on Britain. So there was a lot of conclusions were drawn from the Uxbridge by-election that were attempted to be extrapolated to a national picture. And I just don't think it's possible to do that. And I also think, as we've seen, the Tories didn't see a poll bounce. They didn't see any kind of, like, you know, electoral benefit from any of this. And that seems to have died down a little bit now, that kind of assault on net zero.
Yeah, for example, they then lost Skidmore's seat in the by-election in Kingswood earlier this month. Yeah, Scarlett, on that kind of polling then, that bounce that Nadine was talking about didn't really happen. It was obviously then led into the Tory party conference when, you know, there was similar kind of rhetoric from Sunak, and that didn't really lead to a change in it. You know, where do you think that this kind of sits, again, separating out things like cost of living and energy efficiency from things like net zero? Where does that net zero sit in the polling, and what kind of impact has it had, do you think?
Well, I think part of the reason why it didn't seem to influence polls that much is because there was no consistency. There's been no consistency in messaging. So we've seen a sort of number 10 that is trying lots of different things and not really letting anything stick. So it's quite hard to measure how the public really feel about any of it. I think the biggest problem for them is that the environment is, for Conservative voters, it's reasonably low down priorities, but actually for voters as a whole, we see consistently that their priorities are sort of more fundamental issues. So, you know, or what they see as more fundamental. So cost of living, NHS, immigration. I mean, it's a slightly different picture for younger voters, see environment slightly higher up their priorities, and for Labour voters as well, but they're still overwhelming priorities, the cost of living. So I think the problem with the government is while they're perceived to have been failing on the sort of priorities of voters, it's not really going to matter what they signal on other things. And I think that's their biggest issue at the moment. So it doesn't really matter what they're trying to say about net zero, whether they're pro or against it, because the public are sort of measuring them and seeing them to have failed on these sort of other metrics.
Yeah, absolutely. But there clearly are votes in energy efficiency in a way that it helps with the cost of living. You talked about that polling that you guys had done on, exactly. On those bellwether seats. I think it showed that those who switched their support to Labour, who were Conservative voters in 2019, something like 81% think that the government's not doing enough on energy bills.
That's exactly it. And we've obviously seen energy bills, and they're coming down now, but they're still much higher than they were, for example, before the outbreak of the war in Ukraine. And we've seen this consistent plea from voters, actually, for more government help. And that's still the same now. And as you say, those who have switched their support from Conservative to Labour are more likely to say they want more help from the government. So it is a crucial election issue. But again, it's framed more through the cost of living than it is necessarily through things like net zero.
Mm. And so, Ben, kind of on that, what kind of help do you think the government should do on that? Like, is it kind of, is it more regulatory, or is it more kind of putting money into these kind of schemes or part funding these schemes? Because we know, I say, some people do want to spend money themselves. They just need some help because obviously some of the measures are beyond what they can kind of afford. So what do you think both business and consumers want to see from government in terms of this? Is it regulatory, or is it funding, or is it a bit of a mixture of both?
It's a good question. I think it's actually a mix of all of it, because any government at these times will have a struggle to find the big pockets to support any kind of investments and grants and schemes. We know that also from what Labour just kind of backed away from the recent 28 billion. So of course, there needs to be a support, because the positive thing is that any company that actually are house owner or building owner that invests into good energy solutions will actually gain from it immediately. So it's a good business case, if you like, for a company to invest into a more updated heating system, a more updated. All of those things are actually what speaks for the government to be able to trigger that the businesses and private house owners are investing into energy renovations. That will lower their energy bill, and that will help them on their total cost of living as a private household. So first of all, there's something around awareness that we don't believe that we are doing enough actually for the awareness about the smaller things that you can do in order to do investments into your private house. So everyone knows about light bulbs, but no one knows too much about what goes on in the airing cupboard when you open your heating system, or knows what you can do actually to improve that. There are some very short cut means there as well, like changing the circulator, putting on thermostatic valves, doing hydraulic balancing of the house. Those things are low-cost things that requires relatively modest investments. And here I believe that the government actually also should look at the home improvement grant and say, okay, it's maybe not just for the heat pumps or the insulation, but it could actually be smaller support systems for exchange of pumps. So we know there are about 8 million small circulators in the UK that was installed before the directive that changed the whole paradigm to energy efficient solutions. So 8 million opportunities to reduce the energy consumption of buildings and save those 100 to 110 pounds a year on the energy bill. And that can be supported also through the home improvement grant. So there are opportunities there, which can be a relatively shortcut. The home improvement grant is an upgrade grant, is going on until March next year. So if that program could be reconfigured to that would be a super supportive of reducing the private house owners' energy bill.
Yeah, I think I'll just pick up on what Ben was just saying there, and that I think that it just does show that there is real political opportunity here, because we know that, I mean, it looks very likely it'll be a Labour government next, but I mean, both going into an election and after it, there is room for a government in a mood where no one wants to be spending very much money to really raise awareness of these things, and, you know, for the government expenditure to be really very small, but to also save people a lot of money. And we know there that there's potentially a lot of votes in that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And the government said that, you know, they've committed £6 billion this parliament, and a further £6 billion to 2028 to make buildings kind of more energy efficient. But Nadine, as we've been discussing already, Labour had this much bigger, bolder plan that was going to be this big kind of capital investment and all this kind of stuff. You know, and I remember in 2022, they called on the Conservatives to reverse 12 years of failure and adopt its own plan to insulate 90 million homes, saying how important it was and that it would create, you know, 4 million jobs and all that kind of stuff, and reduce bills by £500. And then earlier this year, suddenly that is massively downgraded. It's now something like £6 billion a year on insulation, when we know that estimates suggested it would cost more than double that to get to where they need to be. And so how do you kind of assess the financial element of it, but also kind of the political element of it? Well, as we know from what Scarlett said, the polling shows that people do want these measures.
So I think financially, I think this, the fiscal situation the government, you know, are in, and the one that the Labour will likely be inheriting, is going to be pretty dire. I mean, obviously, we've seen some briefing over the last few days as well that one of Labour's plans to abolish a non-dom status, which they were going to use the money from that to fund other policies, could now be cut off because Jeremy Hunt may do that to fund tax cuts. So, you know, they are financially quite restrained. So I don't think it was a huge surprise to see this scaling back on the 28 billion figure, which had already been scaled back. And really, you could argue it's not a massive change, given they said only if fiscal rules allow, which that's by the by. I mean, there's going to be a lot of unhappiness, I imagine, with some Labour MPs. We may not hear it now, but maybe when they're in government. You know, home insulation is something that I know people on Miliband's team are quite passionate about, and is important, particularly because a lot of people die in damp and cold homes. I mean, we did a story a few months ago on Politics Home where Labour actually, in response to some new figures on deaths in cold, damp homes, said, you know, this is why our home insulation policy is so important. And obviously that's been scrapped now. So there will be political ramifications for that, and also, you know, potential life ramifications, because it is a significant problem. But at the same time, I think if they're trying to present themselves as fiscally responsible, it's kind of expected that they would scale back on it. So it just shows the bind that Labour are going to be in, I think, when they get elected, on what they want to do and what they actually are able to do, what they feel they are politically, you know, feels reasonable for them to be able to do.
Yeah, and it did feel as though that 28 billion became, which is such a random figure, anyway, 28 billion, not 25 or 30, whatever. It's an odd figure anyway, that it became this bit of a millstone around their neck, and it became a bit of a target for them from the Conservative Party. They were using the 28 billion in a lot of their attack ads and all that kind of stuff, suggesting that they were going to lump this extra debt onto. But I suppose, you know, as you're saying, is that actually, if they wanted to show they were going to be a very progressive government that would fix things like poverty and fix homes for the worst off, and they did need to kind of stick to it. And so I guess it's how, whether they think that actually it's worth it, essentially, to kind of reduce that target, to make themselves a smaller target for attack, but not actually offer that big kind of transformational offer to the electorate.
I think, I think that goes to the heart of what Labour is going to struggle with at this election. It's sort of, you know, not wanting to come across as too radical, but also, what are you offering people then? And I think that'll be Labour's challenge, is to, you know, they're trying to present themselves as change, they're trying to present themselves as kind of a fresh start, but at the same time, like, where is the policy to back this up? And where is that kind of transformational change that many voters are looking for? Because, you know, they look around at not just home insulation, but the NHS, schools, roads, everything, and think, you know, we want things to be better. So there is that kind of challenge for Labour, where they need to offer transformational change, but at the same time, they're trying to kind of dance with this really poor fiscal outlook. I mean, I think also a lot of their core voters will also be thinking, where are the kind of Labour policies, like Labour-esque policies that we would expect to see, like on home insulation? And that was a really big one for I think a lot of MPs. I mean, I had one MP say to me, you know, it's our main policy offering. This was before it was scrapped, but they were like, you know, this is what we can really get behind and we really like. And also, you know, that will be the challenge for Labour moving forward into the election, is what are they going to be offering people then if they're scaling back on their more kind of, inverted commas, radical plans?
Yeah, so Scarlett, just on that, what have you kind of picked up in the polling sense of the 28 billion? Was it being successfully deployed by the Conservatives? And if so, has Labour's rolling back from it, you know, helped them with that? Or, as Nadine was saying, are actually voters looking for them to spend all that money?
I mean, I guess politically speaking, the Conservative attack line did sort of work in that Labour then changed their policy in one of their flagship policies. So they were clearly felt under some sort of political pressure to do so. I think it's a mixed bag with voters. The 28 billion had a very little cut through anyway, actually. So cut through in general with the public, I think, is lower than people think it is for any given political issue. Most people increasingly want to tune out of politics. And I suspect may not even tune back in an election campaign. So I think there's that to say. And then, you know, you do get some voters saying, where were they going to get that money from? But actually, we were finding in focus groups that people were saying that Labour going back on this 28 billion was indicative of what all politicians do, which is to say they're going to do one thing and then do something completely different, and that they were used to broken promises from politicians. So in that way, tar Labour with the same brush that they were doing with other people. Like, they were talking about it in the same breath as the sort of £350 million to the NHS that was a promise during the Brexit campaign that people feel like they never saw, etc. However, all that being said, so while that can be quite damaging, I think, to the Labour Party brand, especially when people are already anxious that they might not be very clear on what they're going to do in government. That being said, it's not damaged their voting intention lead at all. And I think we would have seen it damage it by now, was it going to. So, yeah.
So, yeah, just before we wrap up then, Ben, kind of on that, I suppose, what your kind of industry is looking for, I suppose, is certainty if there's a Labour government coming in. I saw you nodding along when Scott was saying about voters thinking that they say one thing and do another. So what is your industry kind of looking for in terms of that kind of certainty for what a Labour government would be if that's what you've got to work under in the coming years?
So I think any government, Conservative or Labour, would not find the 28 billion to invest into this. So what we're looking for is more that they look for ways to drive forward also the energy consumption reduction in general. So it can be regulations that you need to do energy checks for companies. It can be things that goes for the low-hanging fruits that are there to get the businesses to invest and to get the households to invest where it makes a very short return on the investments that they do. And there are great opportunities to do that by the schemes they already have in play, for instance, on the Conservative. So we're looking for them to continue those kind of things and trying to focus on how do we get the best possible outcome without spending a lot of government money.
That's all we've got time for this week, but you can read all the latest on the big stories from Westminster at politicshome.com and keep right up to date by subscribing to our 7-day week newsletters by clicking on the link on our homepage. Thanks to our brilliant guests, Scarlett Maguire, Nadine Batchelor-Hunt and Ben Jensen. Thanks all again for listening. Please subscribe wherever you podcast and leave us a review. If you want to get in touch, then reach out to us on Twitter @PoliticsHome or email us via news@politicshome.com. But for now, I've been Donald Tolhurst, and this has been The Rundown.